Welcome to City Club of Eugene's January 22nd special program with Governor Kate Brown. This is a special program, is the 18th program of the 2018-2019 programming year. I'm Joel Curran, president of City Club. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club outside today if you're not a member, or go to cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors. Our diamond sponsors are Kaiser Permanente, who exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care to improve the health of our members and communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. The University of Oregon. Since 1876, the UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, and live ethically. More information at uo.edu, universityoforegon.edu. And our Sapphire sponsor, Summit Bank. Support for City Club comes from Summit Bank, your local community bank, an independent community bank headquartered in Eugene. Summit serves businesses and professionals in Eugene, Springfield, Central Oregon. Learn more, sbko.com. And today we particularly would like to thank the University of Oregon that has graciously made the Ford Alumni Center available to City Club and to the governor for this presentation. What is the state of Oregon? Today is the first day of the long session of the Oregon legislature. They are faced with many vexing issues: education, both K-12 and higher education, transportation, infrastructure, PERS, gun safety, just to name a few. Governor Brown will be outlining her legislative and budget priorities, followed by questions from our members. Governor Brown grew up in Minnesota and earned her undergraduate degree from the University of Colorado, Boulder. She came to Oregon to attend Lewis and Clark Northwestern School of Law, where she received her law degree and a certificate in environmental law. She was appointed to the Oregon House of Representatives in 1991. She is a walking endorsement for the importance of the right to vote. She won her first legislative election by a landslide of 7 votes. She has served as Secretary of State. She is Oregon's 38th governor, and she was recently inaugurated for her second term. Prior to entering politics, she worked as a family law attorney in Portland, and then worked as a registered lobbyist in Salem. She lobbied for women's issues. And now would you please join me in welcoming Governor Kate Brown.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to join me today. I know we have a few students in the audience, and I understand it's grading day, so welcome. I hope you will forward your questions on to your parents, who are members of the City Club. And I have not been to the Eugene City Club for a while, since I was last Secretary of State, so I'm delighted to be back again. I have been to Eugene numerous times since then, and was delighted to be down here several times during the election, very strongly that the work we are doing today is so very, very important. My last speaking engagement in Eugene in the fall was at Cappy Eaton's memorial service. And she would have been so proud of Eugene. I understand you had over 2,000 people show up for the Women's March on Sunday. So that's fabulous. Yay. And I'm confident that the work we're doing in the legislature will make her very excited as well. So my turn to the state of the state. And the good news is In many ways, Oregon is progressing on ground that many of our neighbors wish they could tread. Our unemployment rate is the lowest on record. We have one of the fastest job growth rates in the entire country. And in November, Oregonians defeated ballot measures that would have moved us backwards. Yay! Together, we definitely used our vote to affirm our Oregon values. In many ways, though, we stand alone. Our state is growing faster than at any point in Oregon history. And with growth comes a lot of really good things. More jobs, more ideas, and hopefully more opportunities. But at the same time, not everyone across Oregon is experiencing this prosperity. Across Oregon, communities large and small are struggling with homelessness. This crisis is playing out daily on our streets and on our sidewalks. For many families, the cost of housing, education, healthcare, childcare, and of course, higher education are all outpacing wage growth. And all of this against the backdrop of a federal government that has never been in more disarray. Well, now is the time to put our state on a better path forward. The first step, the very first step, is to ensure that our democracy is strong and fight every single effort to undermine it. This session, this very legislative session, I'm going to be working towards campaign finance reform, fight for paid postage on our ballots, and expand our automatic voter registration system. Yay! And I'd love to get your help. My understanding is the first hearing on campaign finance reform is on Wednesday. Certainly, across the country, other states are rolling back voting rights. Oregon is, of course, going in the other direction, and we are leading the way in terms of expanding access. Vote by mail and Oregon's motor voter have made it so that we in Oregon have one of the highest voter participation rates in the entire country. Unfortunately, when it comes to campaign finance, we are still the wild, wild west. No one should be able to buy a megaphone so loud that it drowns out all the other voices. We are also, of course, facing an affordability crisis in healthcare and housing that needs to be addressed immediately. Healthcare is a fundamental right. Yes, it is. The good news is that today in Oregon, 94% of adults have access to health care, and every single one of our children has access. This session, we have an opportunity to stabilize funding for the Oregon Health Plan for 6 years. Let's make this happen, and let's do it quickly. Also very fundamental is that every Oregonian needs to have access to a warm, safe, and dry place to call home. And it should be affordable and accessible as well. We certainly have a housing crisis in this state. We have to act quickly to help the chronically homeless, our children and our families, and of course, our veterans. My budget makes a historic $400 million investment in affordable housing across the state. It's a really ambitious plan, but if we move now, we can get results quickly. As elected officials, we also have to prioritize our resources while leading during trying times. I want to take a moment this afternoon to thank all of our state employees and volunteers who are working to keep federal facilities accessible to Oregonians during the government shutdown that's happening across the country. I also want to thank in particular our Coast Guard, who are literally out there saving lives every single day without receiving a paycheck. Let's give them a round of applause. Government should be working for the people. During my entire time as governor, I have focused on spending every single taxpayer dollar wisely. I've worked closely with the legislature the last legislative session on this issue. We're not going to get credit for that work, but that's not the point. We still have to do it. I'm focused on several important items this legislative session, and I put them in my budget. First, adding internal auditors who will ensure that every state agency are delivering the level of service that Oregonians expect while saving every single penny they can along the way. Yay. Second, eliminating backlogs and decreasing wait times in critical areas like childcare licensing and food safety inspections. And third, modernizing the way we deliver services and purchase goods. We can save taxpayer dollars if we streamline the way state government does business, especially by implementing a new centralized procurement system. While we are tackling today's pressing fiscal challenges, we also need to, of course, plan for the future. Today, we stand at a turning point with an opportunity to put Oregon on a better path forward. Our young people deserve to inherit an Oregon as beautiful and bountiful as the one we cherish today. It is very painful to watch the effects of climate change on our communities across the state. This last summer, the Rogue Valley was covered in smoke for over 8 weeks. 90% of our state is in drought. And last year was the warmest year in Oregon since 1895. Wildfires have increased in intensity and severity in the past decade, threatening our culture, our communities, and of course, our economy. Oregon must continue to pursue solutions that will reduce harmful emissions while creating good jobs and building a clean energy economy. And of course, I have the stats to prove that this is possible. Already, more than 50,000 people work in the clean energy industry in Oregon. More than half of clean energy jobs are found outside of metropolitan Portland, and over 70% of clean energy workers are involved in manufacturing and construction. And we know that this is making a difference. The West Coast, including British Columbia, has witnessed regional economic growth of 32% since 2008, while reducing emissions by 6%. And now, this legislative session, we need to take the next step and pass our Clean Energy Jobs Bill. I hope I can count on your support and your lobbying efforts in front of the legislature. Well, certainly, just as our climate is changing, our economy is also changing very, very rapidly. We need to make sure that every one of our students is future ready. This means that each one of them graduates from high school with a plan for the future and the skills to compete in a global economy. Higher education also needs to be more affordable and more accessible to Oregon families. The good news is, our current strong economy gives us the best chance in a generation to address persistent structural challenges in our education system. The time is now. If we wait, we're only going to fall further behind when the economy eventually falters. At one time, every Oregonian was proud of our education system. It was a promise that if you chose to put down roots in Oregon, your children would receive a world-class education and have the opportunity to achieve their dreams. But over the past couple of decades, we have failed to deliver on that promise. We have not significantly increased per pupil spending since the 1990s. While other states were able to invest in schools, Oregon has had to rely on state funds to backfill. Whoa. Hope it wasn't anything I said. In Oregon, we've had to rely on state funds to backfill local property taxes. How our state provides for the needs of our children is a marker of who we are as a community. After years of underinvestment, it's going to take more than just additional funding to bring our schools back to a level we can be proud of. We have failed our students of color, and we have left rural Oregon behind. Now is the time to close that opportunity gap. Our education system is in desperate need of repair, reform, and reinvestment. It's like an old house that hasn't been maintained. The longer we wait, the more expensive it will be to fix it. I'm looking forward to working with the legislature that's starting their work today, the business community, teachers, and of course parents, to fund K-12 schools at a level that ensures all of our districts don't need to make cuts. My budget also includes resources to stabilize PERS rates for K-12 schools. This is in addition to dedicated investments that we made last year. The unfunded liability in PERS is not going away. We must accelerate our work to stabilize PERS rates so that new dollars go directly into the classrooms. Over the past year, I've had the incredible opportunity to work with the legislature's Student Success Committee to build consensus on how we repair our schools. We need to prepare an additional 10,000 kids for kindergarten. We need to create a school improvement fund that invests in our students and provides smaller class sizes and a longer school year. I know the high school students don't like that one, but tough. Every single high school student must have the opportunity to participate in job training classes like career and technical ed or other types of hands-on learning. We also need to attract, train, and retain the best teachers in the country. And of course, we have to keep our tuition affordable and open the doors to higher education. And thank you, of course, to University of Oregon for opening their doors today to us. My expectations is that the investments we're making in education will improve outcomes for all of our children. Every single one of them. Oregonians also deserve transparency as to how their taxpayer dollars are being spent. As superintendent of schools, I will streamline my oversight of our education system and ensure greater accountability. The chief education office will sunset next year, and the majority of functions will move directly into my office. We will hold school districts accountable by auditing the school improvement fund to ensure that new dollars are used to improve graduation rates, reduce class sizes, and provide for a full school year. I was the oldest of four kids. My mom taught me to squeeze every single bit of toothpaste out of the tube. Oregonians need to know that state government is using every taxpayer dollar wisely. Healthcare, housing, protecting our environment, defending our democracy, and investing in our children. These are fundamentals. But solving the problems before us, turning the corner, it's not going to be easy. And that's okay. We know how to do the tough stuff. We do it the Oregon way, working across the aisle and around the state, urban and rural, Republican and Democrat. We do what we've done time and time again, put politics aside and serve the people of Oregon. In closing, I want to share a little bit about Jacob Burris. We met over the summer. Jacob is 17 years old. His mother paid for their basic needs by waiting tables. And Jacob's health care was covered by the Oregon Health Plan because he has a chronic health condition. It hasn't slowed him down. Jacob is incredibly talented. He designs sweatshirts and shoes for the Dornbecker Foundation. His life decisions, including his profession, will be dictated by his ability to get health insurance because Jacob has a pre-existing condition. The good news is that unlike many states, Oregon protects people like Jacob. And at home, he has a mother who works really, really hard. Fortunately, she just got a new job with healthcare coverage and can start saving and finally get ahead. Our state is at a turning point, just like Jacob's family. Today, we have a choice. Are we willing to do the work to make the dream of a better Oregon come true? We are. And Jacob's story should serve as an inspiration as to how we're going to get this done. In talking to Jacob, his diagnosis changed everything. But living with a pre-existing condition fueled his creativity. He figured out how to communicate with the world in new ways by designing shoes and sweatshirts that tell a story. He's figured out how to talk about living day to day with a medical condition that will stay with him his entire life. And in doing so, he has literally blazed a path toward his future. Maybe he'll get a job one day with one of our homegrown apparel companies, or maybe he'll start one himself. Regardless of what the future holds, I know for Jacob, there's no turning back. The time is now. Our future is in front of us. We have to turn the corner and make it a reality. Together, we can build a better Oregon, one that will make Jacob proud to call Oregon home. Thank you.
Fun fact, in other countries, a pre-existing condition is called your medical record. On your seat, you'll find a piece of paper listing all the upcoming programs, City Club. It should induce you to join City Club if you're not a member, and we'll have people outside that can do that. You'll also find a card for those of you who are not members and wish to ask questions. You can fill out one of these cards and try to find someone who is a City Club member who will ask your questions. We do have pens available, or we will have pens available for those that need them to borrow them to ask the questions. We'll now break for 5 minutes to work on questions. When we come back, it is our longstanding tradition at City Club that only members can ask questions, so we will follow that today. Thank you very much. Before we go to questions from our members, we would like to thank the following gold sponsors of City Club: Network Charter School, Oregon Country Fair, a Eugene tradition, Sacred Earth Botanicals, Emergency Veterinary Hospital, and special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, Dotson Photography, Pack Info, and Simplified Computing LLC, and KLCC, who broadcasts regular City Club City Club programs. Questions can only be asked by City Club members. If you are a non-member, please ask a City Club member to ask the question for you. Questions are limited to 1 minute. I have a timer. If you exceed that, yeah. We have security here.
This is a tough crowd,
that's right,
man.
Yeah. You've been here before, huh?
Yes.
Okay. We We can start the questions with Steve.
Hi, my name is Steve Robinson. I'm a City Club member. I want to thank Governor Brown for her leadership in the area of earthquake preparedness, which most of you know is something that's very near and dear to me. Just today, Governor Brown issued a proclamation designated this Saturday as Cascadia Earthquake Preparedness Day, the 319th anniversary of the last Cascadia quake. Another example of her leadership is her preparation of a plan called Resilience 2025, which called for 250,000 people to have 2 weeks' worth of food and water in their homes. And it also talks about the critical energy infrastructure hub, which a lot of people here may not understand is a huge risk for our state. It's in Portland, and it's in serious danger. And so I wanted to ask Governor Brown if you'd like to say any more about your 2025 plan and specifically the infrastructure hub.
Thank you, Steve. And I think it's so appropriate that you're asking the question, since I've worked very closely with Representative Nancy Nathanson on these issues. The focus in my budget is not only making sure we tackle the affordability crisis in housing and healthcare and childcare and others, but also making sure that we're prepared for the future. And that means, of course, tackling earthquake resiliency. And there's a couple of pieces that I'm focused on. Number one, funding the shake alert warning system that comes out of the University of Oregon. And I know I've got good help from the Eugene delegation on making sure we get the resources to fund it and then implement it. It'll give us the warnings that we need to make sure we can be in the safest places that we can in very short order. The second piece for me is making sure that Oregon households are prepared, and we have a goal set to, in the next handful of years, to prepare 250,000 Oregon families for an emergency. And that means having the supplies and tools available for a 14-day period. That means 1 gallon of water per person for those 14 days, and non-perishable foods like your favorites. Can I say Spam and Eugene? Spam and peanut butter. And obviously making sure that you have other emergency supplies available. So we're working to make sure that families have those supplies available. And then the third piece for me is preparing our infrastructure. And we've had a great partnership with the legislature. Former Representative Phil Barnhart is here today. We worked hard to set aside bonds to ensure, yay, Representative Phil Barnhart, let's give him a round of applause. It's tough stuff serving in the legislature. You have to wear your metal underpants every single day, and we appreciate those who are willing to do it. Making sure that we have bonding capacity available set aside for schools to make sure that they can invest in seismic resiliency, getting our schools out of the tsunami zones on the coast. I think we have a couple more schools that are still in the tsunami zone. We got to get those out. Making sure that we have hospitals that have the infrastructure needed. Our transportation package in 2017 invested in making sure that our roads and bridges are seismically, that they are seismically, we are reinvesting in seismic preparedness. And then lastly, the energy hub that you spoke about. And essentially, Portland hub around the Portland Harbor is the energy confluence for Oregon. And we are working with the private sector. We don't have a lot of tools at the state level to make sure that they are seismically resilient. And I will tell you, they are not at this point in time. And so that has brought a level of urgency to my team to work on this issue. And Mike Harriman, who's our chief resiliency office, is leading that effort. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, Jerry Smith. Here in Eugene, as in most cities in Oregon, we have homelessness at an absolute emergency level. Yes. We have wonderful agencies that are trying to help. They don't have capacity to deal with it. Nightly, there are people on our streets in wheelchairs, pushing walkers on crutches with no place to go. The state used to supply more mental health in the community than they do now. And it seems even harder than it used to be to get a commitment. I watched a person that I feel friendly about step in front of a car. It was a miracle that the car stopped. She gave it no thing. The guy must have anticipated it. And later that day, she overdosed. We've known about her for a year or two. She really needs to be inside somewhere.
Please ask your question, Jerry.
How can we increase the shelter and the services that homeless people need?
And thank you for the question. And my heart goes out to, there's so many families, so many chronically homeless, so many children. Over 20,000 children in the state, according to Oregon schools, are housing insecure or homeless. To our veterans, we have roughly 1,300 to 1,500 veterans that are out on the streets. First of all, we have to collaborate and partner in ways we never have before. We used to be able to rely on the federal government in this arena, and we can't anymore. So the state stepped up. This is one of the first issues that I began working on when I became governor in February of 2015. And those first 3 years, we've invested over $300 million in affordable units, homelessness prevention, and rental assistance. But when you start spreading that statewide, it feels like peanut butter, not very thick. So I mentioned we are investing in a $400 million package. It includes resources for the local community action teams and the housing agencies at the local level. We have to build more affordable units. And so I'm asking the legislature to do something that they've never done before, and that is act quickly on a $20 million bonding package to build 200 units for the chronically homeless, and a $20 million general fund to fund assistance, technical assistance for our landlords and tenants. Everyone deserves a warm, safe, dry place to call home, and it has to be affordable and accessible. We're working together. We need to partner even more closely than we ever have before with the local communities. Thank you.
Next.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Reed, City Club member. I'm asking this on behalf of an audience member. One of the provisions in the Affordable Care Act inserted by Senator Ron Wyden is that states are not precluded from creating their own single-payer system. Do you anticipate working with California and Washington State to create a West Coast single-payer healthcare system?
So my goal right now as your governor is to make sure that every Oregonian has access to affordable health care. I mentioned 94% of adults have coverage. About 98% of our kids actually have coverage. We need to move it to 100%. My goal this legislative session is to stabilize funding for the Oregon Health Plan. Normally, we fund it for a two-year period. I'm asking the legislature, and we brought together over the last several months a coalition of healthcare providers and insurers and advocates to come up with a funding package for the Oregon Health Plan. It is a six-year package. It is broader than the previous funding package and includes a cigarette tax increase. And yes. And my reason for doing this is because I believe we need to stabilize the current system and ensure better access before we look at other options. I anticipate that we will be having conversations about a single payer. I assume legislative committees will be discussing that. I support everyone having access, but my first priority as Oregon's governor is to stabilize our healthcare system and ensure that everyone has access right now.
Hi, I'm Dr. Henry Elder. I have been a member of the City Club for 3 years. We have a crisis in healthcare, and it's getting worse, and the Affordable Care Act is not going to solve that problem. We do have a bill that is sponsored by many of our representatives in the Eugene area to establish a single-payer healthcare bill. I don't understand why you would not support an effort to provide universal health care, not just fragmented health care.
I'm not opposed. I support everyone having access to health care, a universal system. I think the question is, what do you do until you transition to that new system? And that's why I'm arguing that we need to stabilize funding for the Oregon Health Plan for a six-year period, and then work on another solution that would ensure everyone has access. But my focus right now is to ensure that all Oregonians have access to the Oregon Health Plan and to stabilize funding for that particular plan.
Thank you for coming today, Governor. I'm Paul Thompson, a City Club member for some time. This is a firearm safety question from one of our guests today.
There's a lot of red T-shirts in the room.
And this is a firearm safety question focused on children. Would you support a common sense firearm safety bill for children, which is written in part by an organization that specializes in it?
It depends upon what it looks like. Are you talking about a safe storage concept?
I think it would include a wide spectrum of possibilities and so on. I think this individual is offering, as part of the Kids Safe Foundation, to assist in the scripting of the bill.
So I believe that every Oregonian, and particularly our children, have the right to be free from gun violence. And so in my work as governor, we have made steady progress towards what I would consider as common sense firearm safety measures. We crafted the universal background checks legislation. We closed the domestic violence loophole legislation. And we've continued to work to provide law enforcement the tools that they need. But in October of 2015, I had to go down to Umpqua Community College after that horrific shooting and talk with the families and see the impacts of this horrible event on their lives. And so for me, it's working to make sure that we use every single tool in the toolbox. And I certainly support reasonable common sense, safe storage measures. There are number of bills being introduced, including mine. I support moving forward on closing the Charleston loophole, i.e. if people don't pass a background check, not letting them get a gun. I support banning bump stocks and increasing purchase ages. In terms of specific legislation, we are playing a leadership role at the legislature in terms of crafting that legislation and working to make sure that our children can be safe in their schools, that we can all be safe, frankly, in our communities and our places of religious worship. So we're going to use every single tool that we can.
Rob, just a second. After Rob's question, Rose Wilde will ask a question on behalf of a University of Oregon student. Rob?
Thank you, Governor, for being here. I'm Rob Zako, City Club member, Executive Director of Better Eugene Springfield Transportation. I'm a member of the Lane Area Commission on Transportation that advises the Oregon Transportation Commission. As you know, Governor, last week Matt Garrett announced he was stepping down from the Oregon Department of Transportation, creating an opportunity for you and the Oregon Transportation Commission to revise the direction of transportation. Could you speak briefly about your vision and priorities for transportation in Oregon? Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for all of your work. I have to say thank you to Matt Garrett and our other public servants. Matt Garrett has served as the head of the Oregon Department of Transportation, I think for 13 years, longer than any currently serving Department of Transportation director in the entire country. He was selfless, absolutely dedicated, and absolutely determined to making sure that we passed a transportation package, and that is being successfully implemented. In terms of my vision moving forward, I think it's critically important that we develop a transportation infrastructure that supports healthy and sustainable communities. So for me, that means making sure our kids can either walk or bike or scooter to school safely, that we have a bus system, thank you, Lane Transit folks that are in the room, that is accessible not just to people in the downtown urban cores, but for folks living on the edges, that it is most accessible to the people that need it the most, our underserved low-income communities and communities of color in our rural communities. That we have a transportation system that will meet the needs of the future. That means, obviously, reducing our carbon emissions substantially and building a system that is for the future of Oregon. And I look forward to working with stakeholders to bring in a director that will implement that vision. Bob Van Brocklin with the Oregon Transportation Commission will be leading that conversation. I anticipate that stakeholders will be involved.
Rose?
Hi, Madam Governor. Thank you for joining us. Students from the Cascadia Action Network of the University of Oregon had a question related to Jordan Cove, and there was a second related question from others that I'll just, I think that you could answer them easily in one short answer. The students would like to know, why haven't you come out against the Jordan Cove pipeline? The related question had to do with how the passage of a clean energy jobs bill might impact whether the Jordan Cove project could move forward or be a contradiction to a safe and stable climate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I thought this question might be coming. It is my obligation as governor and my duty as governor to make sure that statutes are followed in Oregon, that regulations are enforced, and that people on all sides of a particular issue have an opportunity to have their voice be heard. And that means ensuring that there is a fair process. And that's exactly what I'm doing as your governor, is ensuring that there's a fair process. There are over a dozen permitting, state permitting, in this particular project. I'm expecting state agency heads to follow the regulatory framework that they have to follow, and I'm expecting them to follow the law. I also obviously want to make sure that the federal government is not overstepping its bounds. As you all know, that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is essentially the decider in this particular project. So I will continue to ensure that the process is fair, and I will work to make sure that all Oregonians can trust the process. Thank you.
Doug, thank you for your courtesy.
You're welcome. Thank you, Governor Brown, for being here. It was a pleasure to support you last fall. Always good to see you. So I have a follow-up question to the one that you just answered, and that is, what is the Department of State Lands board role in this process? The board.
Thanks, Doug, and I appreciate the question. I think some of you may have participated in the Department of State Lands hearings. They held, Vicki Walker is the director of the Department of State Lands. They just finished a couple of week road tour. I don't know if there were any hearings in Eugene. I know there was obviously a hearing in southern Oregon, in Klamath, and on the south coast. Their job is to make a decision on the permitting process, and Director Walker has said that she will make the decisions directly and that the decision will not come to the board. So the short answer to your question is nothing.
What if you are dissatisfied with her answer?
I suppose we could take a, overrule that. I don't know what the legal ability for the land board to do that. I'd have to take a look at the statutes and the regs. So,
Wendy?
Wendy Wheeler Coltrane, been a member for many years. This is a question from a non-member in the audience. Given your commitment to addressing climate change, what will you do to reverse the Trump administration's present disastrous course?
This could be a full-time conversation with the City Club. Look, in my lifetime, I don't think we have ever seen a president so irresponsible. I could go on and on and on. A level of chaos, confusion, and corruption at the federal level that we have never seen before, in at least in my lifetime. I think for me specifically around climate change policy, I feel very strongly that Oregon needs to continue to be a leader in this arena. That we may certainly be a small part of the global emissions problem, but we can be a national leader, and we will continue to do so. You have a legislative leadership and a governor who's absolutely committed to passing our clean energy jobs bill. We can't do that alone. We're going to need your help. And we look forward to seeing you in Salem. But that's not enough, frankly. We need to move forward on legislation that would codify the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act from the 1970s. I know it feels like we should be past this, but I see this legislation, if it happened in the United States, it could happen here. I see this legislation as being instrumental in making sure that we have an insurance policy, that our environmental protections won't go any lower than that. And then also, I think it's critically important that we provide our agencies, particularly our natural resources agencies, with the resources, with the data, with the people power to ensure that we are being adaptive and resilient in the face of global climate change. So we are going to be having conversations about how do we provide more resources to the Water Resources Department so we have the ability to capture water in different ways because we're not seeing the snowfall that we did. We obviously are having a conversation around our fire policy. I will be naming a fire council in the next few weeks to tackle both fire management but also prevention. How do we make sure the Department of Forestry has the resources and tools they need to be better prepared? I could go on, but that's the work I will be focused on over the next 6 months. So thank you.
Next.
Hi, I'm Molly Stafford, City Club member, and I'm asking a question for one of the audience members. The Oregon Department of Energy seems to be in disarray, and we lost the residential conservation program last year. What does the future hold for the Department of Energy and its conservation programs?
Thank you. I appreciate that question. And we have brought on new leadership in the last couple of years at the department. But that being said, the underlying purpose of the Department of Energy is really changing. And that's why I am proposing, and I hope I get legislative support, to essentially have the Department of Energy dissolve and create the Oregon Climate Authority. And their focus will be, obviously, on climate. I think this needs to be the focus of this agency, and look forward to working with stakeholders to ensure that they have the right people in place, that they have the tools they need to ensure that our clean energy jobs legislation is implemented in a way that Oregonians can rely on.
Hi, my name is Glenna Jordan. I'm a new member. And I'm also a member of the South Willamette Valley chapter of NOW, National Organization of Women. My question is regarding paid family and medical leave. Women are the primary or co-breadwinners in 2/3 of families. We know that 3/4 of women that enter into the workforce today will become pregnant at least one time in their working life. We are seeing many women have to choose between losing their job and ability to pay the bills and feed their families or returning to work in a very short period of time after giving birth, sometimes as quickly as 2 weeks, and that's because that's all they have for paid leave. Much research is done that demonstrates the negative effects on a mother returning to work immediately after giving birth, physically as well as emotionally, and it's long-term as well as short-term. But we're also seeing the negative effects on children, short-term and long-term, when the mother is not able to be home with the child for bonding time and for breastfeeding.
Please ask your question, ma'am.
If we truly want to put our family's health first, we must implement a paid leave program that would give new mothers the economic security to take time to be with their new child. What are your plans for paid family and medical leave this legislative session?
Thank you, and I hope I can get some of your talking points as we move forward on the legislation. So I started my career as an advocate for children and families, and I intend to end it as one. It is my expectation before I complete my final term as governor that we have a paid family leave system in place. So I actually started in the state capitol as an advocate for a women's organization. It was the Women's Rights Coalition, and they pooled all the radical feminist women's organizations in Oregon, pooled their resources. organizations like AAUW, now Planned Parenthood, pooled their resources, and I got to be that person in 1991. And I worked on legislation with a coalition of women advocates that enabled parents, both men and women, to stay home with their sick children or their sick family members and not have to worry about losing their jobs. And when Governor Barbara Roberts signed that bill into law, Oregon became one of the first states in the entire country to recognize family medical leave. I also know that without funding, it is very hard for a lot of families to take that time off. So I'm very committed to working with advocates. We have to figure out how we implement the system in a way that enables all of our families to be able to use it and in a way that allows our small businesses to thrive.
My name is Margaret Malsh. I'm a city club member, and I'm asking this question on behalf of an audience member. It's a little similar to a previous question, but maybe more specific. Does your budget allocate any resources, or does your administration have initiatives to address safety in schools and on campuses?
Yes, and following the tragic shooting at Umpqua Community College, I created a task force, and it was chaired by Andre Leduc here at the University of Oregon. He is an incredible human being. We are continuing that work. We were able to get a couple of the recommendations implemented, but I'm absolutely adamant. I think there's a $15 million security package in my budget, and I'm absolutely adamant that that get done this legislative session. I have to tell you, it's probably the tip of the iceberg, and there's more work to be done. I just want to say thank you to U of O and Andre for the leadership that he is providing, not just for the university here, but for both our private and our public institutions across the entire state. Thank you.
I'm sorry, we've run out of time, Ruth. I'm sorry.
Can we ask afterwards then?
Sure, I'll stay.
Okay, great. Please join us on Friday, January 25th at our regular time, 12 o'clock at the Baker Center for Continuing Education. We will have the second of our governors. Former Governor Kitzhaber will address City Club at that time on rebuilding community beyond the new tribalism. And tomorrow night at Tsunami Books, our community spotlight, Eric Richardson, the incoming president and president of NAACP, will interview me. Only Eric gets the applause. Please come out tomorrow night. I promise you, it's from 6 to 7. It's less depressing than watching the news.
Thank you all very much. I so appreciated your time and
thank
energy.
You, Governor Kate Brown. Thank you. This is the governor.